Thanks to the organizers for inviting me. I want to talk about some work with Tom Scanlon and Anand Pillay on differential jet spaces in a particular context. But unfortunately, the work isn't as complete as I'd hoped it would be by now. So I'll focus on trying to say what it is we're trying to do, and maybe some speculative things at the end. But I want to start by talking a little bit about the sort of current interest in jet spaces of various sorts, where it came from, because I think it's a good example of feedback the other way in model theory. So where the model theory of a particular geometric structure informs general model theory, which is then applied to other geometric structures, right? So the context in which these jets came up first in model theory was not in the differential context, but in the analytic one. So I want to say just a few words, the compact complex analytic structures. So I want to say a few words about how it came up, right? So we work in this structure, which maybe many of you have already seen. It's a many-sorted structure where we have a sort for each compact complex analytic space. And our language, so our basic definable sets, are the analytic subsets of, say, finite Cartesian powers, or Cartesian products, I guess, of sorts. This is this category of compact complex analytic spaces. This is the way we view it model theoretically in this language. And then this structure has a well-behaved theory. It has, for example, quantifier elimination. It's finite Morley rank. And it has elimination of imaginaries. And so we work in some saturated elementary extension. We want to consider canonical types, right? So types over canonical parameters. So we have a type. So I'm going to work now inside this universal domain for this theory. And we have a type which is stationary. We take its canonical base. And we consider the restriction to the canonical base. This is what I mean by canonical type, just a stationary type restricted over its canonical parameter. And we want to understand this type. So we take a realization of this canonical and then the fact, which is that I'm trying to say where the interest in jet spaces came from. So the fact that was observed by Pillay from a theorem of giving a model theoretic interpretation of a theorem due to Fujiki and Campana independently, is that if you look at the type of C over A, the type of the canonical parameter over the realization, then this is P internal. Always, right? For any such canonical parameter. P here is the projective line, which is one of the sorts in this structure. It's the sort where the complex field lives definably. And so these types are always are algebraic in the sense they are internal to the sort in which algebraic geometry happens. So what I was able to conclude from this, I'll get back to the statement in a second, but what he was able to conclude was a direct proof of the dichotomy theorem in this structure. Namely, if P happened to be is of rank 1 and non-locally modular, then P is non-orthogonal to this sort, to the projective sort. So this is the dichotomy theorem in this context, because, I mean, the infinite field is definable here. It's the only infinite field definable in the structure, and it lives on this sort. Right? So the dichotomy in this case would say a rank one type is either locally modular, or it's very much connected to the algebraic closed field that's around, the only one that's around, which is the complex field. And so that's what this says. And indeed, once you have this, it's more almost immediate. So, the type of C over A is internal. Well, it's internal to P by this fact, but it's also internal to the type P as well. I mean, it's the canonical parameter, and so it lives, it's a definable closure of a Morley sequence, for example. So it's internal to both this type and this type. And now, but it's not trivially internal, right? Because it's, so this is non-algebraic. Because of non-local modularity, the canonical parameter isn't algebraic over the first element in the Morley sequence. So this internality is not a trivial thing. And then these are both minimal. So non-algebraic type internal to P, since P is rank 1, means it's actually non-orthogonal. So you get that P is not orthogonal to the type of C over A, which is not orthogonal to the projective sort. This sort, by the way, the induced structure is just the algebraic structure, so it's a strongly minimal sort. So then by transitivity, P is not. So from here, it's really very quick to see that you get the dichotomy once you have such statements about the canonical parameter over a realization. So what does it mean to look at, what does it mean to be looking at this type, the canonical parameter over realization? So I just want to spell this out a little bit. Suppose A is in some sort, right? It's a complex space in which A is, this realization is living in this sort, and let's let Y, X be the C locus of A, right? The C locus of A. Namely, by quantifier elimination, every type is a generic type of some irreducible analytic set. So the type of A over C is the generic type of some irreducible analytic set. That's what I'm setting Y to be. Right? It's the smallest analytic set in the sense of this, in the non-standard sense, in the sense of this universal domain, which contains A and is defined over C. And then C itself, the canonical parameter, lives somewhere else as elimination imaginary, so this canonical base is living in some other sort. And so we can look at the locus, just the empty set locus, say, C. This will be some irreducible analytic set living in our structure over the empty set. And finally, take Z to be the locus of A, well, CA. So this will live, so the picture is that you have CA, so D cross X, and you have two projection maps, right? Yeah. And the idea as one views this projection here is defining a family of analytic subsets of X. So, for example, if you take the fiber above C, ZC, what is that? That's just take the inverse of the point C under this projection. Then you get, project on the other way the inverse, right? So you take the inverse of C and look at it as a subset of X, and what that is just Y. So Y is the generic, C is a generic point in D, and Y is just a fiber above C, so Y is a generic fiber of this family. And the type of A over C, so the point here is that the type that we're interested in, namely the type of A over C, which is basically P, but restricted to its canonical parameter, is a generic type of, let's say, A generic fiber of this family of analytic subsets of X. So we view Z to D as a family of analytic subsets of X just by taking fibers, right? So I'm just making this, I'm just trying to draw the geometric picture of what the meaning of these types are. And now the fact that this is a canonical type, the fact that C is a canonical parameter tells us, so canonical type, what does that tell us? Well, this can be, what this means is that if you take a point in D, any point in D, then D is the code for ZD. ZD is the fiber above D. It's an analytic subset in X. And so this family is parameterized by its codes. By code here, I mean in the sense of, you know, model theory, say. So the fact that we're starting with a canonical type is just ensuring that the family we get by varying the parameters is a canonical family. Right? All the members of these are being parameterized by their codes. And now what does it mean to look at the type of C over A? Well, from the geometric picture it's clear, you're now looking at the projection the other way. Right? So CA is a generic point in Z, and we're projecting to A, and we're looking at the type of that fiber. So the type of C over A is the generic point of the generic fiber in this projection. Namely, you project pi 2 inverse of A. It's a subset of D. Of course, we can view Z as parameterizing a family of analytic subsets of D by looking at the other projection. But what is this? Just looking at what this is, right? I mean, looking at all the points in D, D are just, so we can identify the members of Z with elements in D since they're codes for these members of this family. And then we're projecting onto 2 and looking at those things that, you know, meet A. So this is just the space of codes for members of this family of analytic sets which pass through A. That's all we're doing. So we start with a canonical family of analytic sets, and then we look at those members in the family which pass through a point. So now we have a family of analytic sets passing through a given point. And looking and trying to, you know, studying this type is just studying this space of this family, the family of things passing through A. Right? So that's what it means to look at this type, and saying that it's p-internal is saying, well, that this space is essentially algebraic. So you can view the family of the space itself by taking codes. So this is an analytic subset of D, but we think of it as the family of analytic subsets of X inside Z, which pass through A. And it's an algebraic family. Always, right? It's basically what they're saying. And so the Kampana-Fujiki theorem, let me just mention that the Kampana-Fujiki theorem that Anand interpreted says that pi 2 from Z to X is a Moisheson morphism. That it's Moisheson over, that Z is Moisheson over X. And then just translating, so my thesis, I show that you can translate this notion of relative Moisheson to just saying that this morphism is Moisheson if and only if the generic type of a generic fiber is p-internal. So that's where this is coming from. And the technique that they use to prove this, right, so to study these kinds of sets, is where these jet spaces come up. No, pi 2. Pi 1 is not Moisheson because, right, so pi 1 parameterizes the analytic subsets of X coming from our type, A over C. So A over C is not internal, but C over A is. So this is not a family of algebraic subsets of X. It's a family of analytic subsets of X. But if you fix a point and look at those that pass to that point, then that family, its set of codes is algebraic. So Yeah, so this is always true, right? There's no algebraically conditioned in the hypothesis. It's just always true that whenever you have a canonical family and you project onto X and it's pi 2, you get something that's algebraic. I don't know if it's, it seems a little bit surprising. But, the technique is this jet spaces. So the idea is you have these things passing, you have a family of analytic sets passing to a point, and if you can determine, so given one such analytic space, like Y, right? It's an analytic space in this family passing through A. You want to determine it from among all the other ones passing through A by some algebraic information. And that's what the jet spaces are. Right? They are these spaces you associate to an analytic space at a point, which determines this analytic space from among all the other ones in this family passing through that point. Right? And it is something very algebraic, and that's where the internality, that's where the Moishe Zone comes from. And so this, just roughly speaking, what the technique was. There's an analytic notion of jet space that they were using, and this is that feedback I was talking about. That I guess this is what was noticed, and then Pille and Ziegler said, well, let's try and do this in another case where we know the dichotomy theorem is true, namely that of differential fields. And let's try to develop the right notion of jet space with the right properties so that we have an analog to the Campana-Fujiki theorem and thereby get a direct proof of the dichotomy there. Right? So this is why jet spaces, well, maybe this is one way of describing how jet spaces became sort of part of model theory. So I want to talk about the Pillay-Ziegler thing in a second, but let me say what these jet spaces are, at least in the algebraic case itself. Of course, it's not useful it's not useful for these purposes in the algebraic case because there's no question of the dichotomy there. But I'm not going to define what the jet spaces are in the analytic case. It's a bit involved. But in the algebraic case, let's see what these jet spaces are, and then here they use an analytic analog of that. So what do I mean in the algebraic case? So this is just, let's say, algebraic geometry of the complex numbers. So so let's look at it in the algebraic case. So suppose, let's just work in affine space. This is an algebraic variety over the complex numbers. And let's take a point in Y. Then we want to define the jet space of Y at A. Okay, and it should somehow determine Y among all other subspaces of AN passing through A. So there's one for each natural number. So the nth jet space. So by the way, this jet space is not the jet spaces in the sense of Boehm, right? This is a classical algebraic geometric notion of jet space. It's a different object than jet space in the sense of prolongation. I mean, there's relationships, but we're not in a differential context. We're just working in algebraic closed fields for this definition, for example. The jet space of Y at A, there's maybe various ways of describing it. I think the most direct one is to take, well, you take, let this be the maximal ideal of Y at A, right? Maximal ideal in the local ring of functions, algebra, you know, rational, regular functions on Y at A, and take the maximal ideal, and then look at, consider the maximal ideal modulo its power to the m plus 1 times, viewed as a vector space, right? So view this, in fact, finite dimensional. Vector space over the field, right? When you mod out by this power, you obtain a finite dimensional vector space, and then take its dual. So this jet space is going to be, I'll denote it by this, little j sub m of y at A to be the dual of that vector space. Maximal ideal of Y at A mod maximal ideal of Y at A to the power m plus 1. Right. So that's the definition of the algebraic jet space. It's finite dimensional vector space over the complexes. But we view it, we sort of have an embedding here, we can view this as a subspace of the nth jet space of affine space at A. And it's not hard to see that the nth jet space of affine space at A is again some affine space. So we view this as embedded in some affine space. So these are sub-varieties of some affine space themselves, which happen to be vector subspaces, complex subspaces. I mean, over the complex field. Okay, so that's the definition, and then the fact about how it determines is pretty, so the construction's pretty straightforward. Oh, yeah, so this is the notation, right? So A is a point in Y here, so in general, the notation, this is the nth jet space of Y at the point A. That's probably not, I don't actually, this is maybe not the best notation, but... Yeah, so it's the same thing except where Y is the affine space, right? So A is a point in Y, it's also a point in the affine space. You know what I mean? So this is also, yeah, so if we just took Y to be the full, so An is just Cn, right? Take just the N. Yeah, so this is the maximal ideal of Y at A. Yeah, at a point. So this is all happening locally. You fix even for AN. Yeah. So there's nothing here, right? Oh, this A and this A will be the same, right? So A is a point of Y and also a point of AN, right? And the jet space of Y at A is a subspace of the jet space of any bigger variety at the same point from the construction. So these are the same A's. I'm not answering your question.
The front row is now satisfied.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, if you vary A, you get different things, right? Yeah, you still get an affine space, but I mean, I mean, it'll be the same, they'll all be the same dimension, all the affine spaces, so I guess in some sense they're all the same. Yeah. Right, but I mean, right. Yeah, I mean, you get the same thing. And then the fact about how these determine it follow pretty easily. Namely, if you take, so say Y prime is some other subspace of AN, also containing Y, right? So you have another algebraic variety, another algebraic variety of affine space going through the point little a, then, and if the nth jet space of Y at A is equal to the nth jet space of Y prime at A for all M. And what this equality, the reason I said this is because we're working inside this fixed affine space. So by this equality, I mean as under these embeddings, right? As subspace, as, let's say, subvarieties of this ambient space in which we're working. Under this fixed embedding, you get if these two algebraic varieties which intersect, which have a common point in intersection A, if their jet spaces at that point are always equal, then this implies that Y equals Y prime. This is the way in which it determines. And what's behind this is just the fact, right, that the intersection of these maximal ideals, all of them, as you range over A, is always zero. In this setting, right? So it's not hard to see just from this fact that this is true. So it's saying that the algebraic variety Y at a point A is determined just from that point A, as long as you take infinitely smaller neighborhoods. Right? So if you know Y infinitely at one point, you know Y everywhere, I guess. No. You don't need, this is just always true. It just follows literally from this, and this is just, you have a local ring, Noetherian integral domain, maximal ideal, the intersection is always, there's no smoothness assumption here. It's just true at every point. It's determined at any point on its variety. Yeah. Oh, no, so I finished with this. Maybe I should have been clear. I'm now not talking about, so this point was where the idea of jet spaces sort of came from. And here I was working in the saturated elementary extension of the analytic category. These are compact analytic spaces. And that's where the notion of jet space is, you know, that's where it was observed by Anand, that this is useful for kind of dichotomy theorems. And I wanted to sketch how you get the dichotomy from. And then I'm now saying, okay, so the notion of jet space, so this is this thing, right? So the notion of jet space was useful here, maybe it's useful in other categories, and I'm just defining what a jet space is. This is not model, you know, I mean, you can think of this as being inside the complex field, just in the complex field, the structure of the complex field, or just, yeah, there's no model theory on this board. I'm just trying to define what it is in the most simple case, and why in the algebraic case it does determine the algebraic variety, and then there's an analog of it in the analytic case that also determines the analytic variety, and that's why it tells you something about this, because these are the codes of the spaces going through the point A, right? So I don't know if this is very clear, but by the way, we seem to have to do this for all M, right? But we're not interested in really determining Y among all algebraic subvarieties in the ambient space, but within a uniformly definable family, right? That's what we needed here, right? We were looking at inside a uniformly definable family, trying to determine one space among all the others passing through A. So by saturation or by compactness, I guess, for example, but maybe more easily by algebra, you get a bound on this if the Y primes are all coming from some uniformly definable family. Right? That should be more or less clear. That you don't need to check all of them, you just have to check up to some M, if you're restricting to a particular family. Now there is, yeah. I didn't write it down, though. How does it come in here? In this setting, you get it by, so you don't use the Bond theory, right? So you get it by just sort of the hands-on algebra. You look at these jets, you show, you know, yeah, you show it directly using the algebra. I mean, if you're in a uniform, you're still using the uniform definable family notion here, but in the analytic sense, and then there's a inherent uniformity, and you produce it. But. So, of course, once you know that the jet spaces are definable in this case, you could use the model theory here, right? So now the Pele-Ziegler result. I started a bit late, right?
You did.
Okay. So let's look at, so from the analytic category, the idea is to go to the differential one, right? So we look at model of differentially closed fields in characteristic zero. And you want to imitate this to get the dichotomy here. So given a delta variety, you want to define the notion, and let's say we restrict here to finite rank. So there's an analog between the analytic category and the differential category when you restrict to finite rank. There's no infinite rank stuff here, right? But there is infinite rank, potential infinite rank stuff here. So we restrict to the finite rank case. And then what Pele-Ziegler do is they define the right notion of jet space in this case. So this is the algebraic one. There's an analytic analog here given by Fujiki. And they give a differential analog. So define the notion of differential, let's say delta jet space for each m, okay? So the mth delta jet space of x at a. So again, a is a point. A is some point in your delta variety. So they want to come up with the right notion, and it should satisfy the right properties. It should determine it, and it should, well, we'll see what these properties are. So let me say just very quickly what their definition is, because what I want to talk about is an extension of this definition. So somehow I need to say a word about what this definition is. What is the analog? Well, first of all, okay, so this is going to be a bit hand-waving, right? But we may assume that X is given by, well, let me say this slightly better. We may assume there is a a rational map, right? An algebraic rational map S on X bar, where X bar I'm just setting to be the Zariski closure of X inside the affine space. X is a delta variety, it's not an algebraic variety. Take its Zariski closure. Now we're just working with an algebraic variety. So we can assume there is some rational map on this algebraic variety such that X is a subspace of its algebraic closure, is a subset of its algebraic closure, is given by the equation S of X is equal to delta of X. I haven't really said where the map S maps to. It maps to the first prolongation. But it's a rational map. You can think of it in coordinates. It's a rational coordinate map. This is the finite rank assumption. Yeah, so it's sort of not how, when I say we may assume, it's because, well, it's a finite rank. You take a generic point, say, of X, and then look at its, apply the derivation to it. Eventually, you become algebraic over the previous ones, and then differentiate once more, and you become rational over the previous ones, and then replace X by sufficiently, you know, a definably isomorphic copy of it, namely, apply the derivation to it sufficiently long, and then you'll have this. So we may assume, the reason I'm saying we may assume is because we're only interested in the generic type, right? In the application and so on, we're talking about the generic type. So I'm only changing this by a delta birational isomorphism, a generically definable isomorphism. So if we change X that way, then we can just assume that X is just defined as a subset of an algebraic variety by saying that the derivation is equal to some rational map, some map not involving delta, zero order. Okay, so that's, and then how does this help us? So S induces on X bar of A, so this is an algebraic variety, I take its local ring, right? This is the function of the local ring of X bar at the point A. So it induces on this local ring a delta module structure. So let me say for a second what I mean by delta module structure, a map, say, D from this. So viewed, say, as a delta module structure over K. So view this as a K vector space, an infinite dimensional K vector space. Taking a delta module structure as an additive map, such that it satisfies the only possible kind of Leibniz rule you could do for modules, namely D of C times F. So C is an element of our field, F is an element of our module here, then this should be equal to, well, you should be C times D of F, plus you should apply delta to C, and times it by F. Right? So it's an analog of a differential ring, differential module, delta module structure, extending, so maybe I should say over K delta. That's right? The same delta on the coefficients. So why does S induce such a delta module structure? Well, it's just This is an algebraic variety. You're looking at its local ring. Take a function in it and just differentiate formally, say. Let's say you just took for formal differentiation. Well, what you'll get is you'll have derivatives applied to variables at various places in the expression. Replace those delta of the coordinates by F of those coordinates. And then check that it actually does this. And it does this because X, not X bar, but X itself does satisfy, you know, is given by this equation, and so such a map will be additive from here, and it will satisfy this. I mean, there's something to check algebraically here. But just comes by replacing delta by S. Right. So we get a delta module structure on the local ring, which also one would have to check, induces D on OX bar A induces a delta module structure on the finite dimensional K vector space given by the maximal ideal of X bar at A, modulo the maximal ideal of X bar at A to the M plus 1, which is a finite dimensional K vector space. Notice we've sort of left, in some sense, we've left the differential category. We've replaced X with X bar. So we're working with an algebraic variety here. These are the algebraic local rings, and this is the algebraic maximal ideals. And the D module structure on the local ring restricts and induces a D module structure here. takes things that vanish on A back to things that vanish on A, and it preserves the order of vanishing. Okay. Okay. Now actually, here I'm not. Maybe somebody here I might actually be now assuming to get that A is generic, A is smooth. So let's actually take a generic. You know, it doesn't have to actually be. Just has to be sufficiently smooth in X bar. To get this that it induces. I'm not totally sure if that works at every point. And even to get this, maybe it does. I can't remember. Write down the calculations and see if you need to work at a smooth point or not. If anyone remembers. You know, you just have to write down the equations. I can't remember what the obstacle might be, but you apply it and see that it still should be defined at A, and then it should take things that vanish to things that vanish, and it should preserve the order. The map D should preserve this thing. Okay, so maybe in brackets, right? Maybe you need to take this to be sufficiently general, but I'm not sure. I can check afterwards. But this is, none of this is hard, right? You just have to write it down. It might be you have to make some assumption at some point, but okay. Yeah, so this has a delta module structure, right? So let's call it D as well. Right? Now, now the definition that they give is, I'll use a superscript delta to mean the delta jet space, as opposed to an algebraic jet space, of X, which is the delta variety at the point A, to be the set of points in the algebraic jet space of X bar at A. X bar is an algebraic variety. I can take its algebraic jet space as defined above there. Take elements in here. Well, what are elements in here? They are dual to this, right? So they're maps from this vector space to K, right? So not all of the ones, but the ones that commute with this delta module structure. So alpha, so if I apply alpha to some elements, so I'm viewing this alpha now as an element of the dual, so I'll apply it to some function here, and then take it, so this will be an element of the field. If I apply delta to it, I should get the same as if I applied alpha to D of F. That's a very natural definition, I think. I mean, you want to get the notion of a differential jet space, so you don't just take the dual, you take those things which commute with the relevant additional structure that's there. Of course, you need to know that there is a differential delta structure on this algebraic thing, right? This is just an algebraic variety, maximal ideal. And that's where the finite rank in the section comes in, to actually give you a delta module structure on this space. And once you have the right, a natural delta module structure, it should be more or less clear what one does. One asks it to commute. So this is a sub, so you define it, so this is the delta, this is the mth, I don't know why I'm putting quotations, the mth delta jet space of X at A. Of course, it doesn't make sense to ask for the algebraic jet space of X at A because X is not an algebraic variety. But it does make sense to ask for X bar. And so we use what we know and define this as, you know, a subgroup, say, of the algebraic thing of the Zariski closure. There might be better, more coordinate-free ways of doing this. Of course, all of this depends on my embedding of X and AN and taking Zariski closures, but I think it's just more direct to say it this way. But you can do this in a coordinate-free approach as well, if you want. Okay. And in fact, it's not. It's a C vector subspace, where C is the constant of our differentially closed field. Just because this equation, right, you can pull out constants. So it's preserved under scalar multiplication by constants. And then what is proved, what they prove, is that this is just a definition. For it to be useful, you need it to do what the jet spaces did in the algebraic category, namely the properties that is proved in this Pillay-Ziegler paper is, well, first of all, this delta jet space is a finite dimensional vector space over the conscience. So it's very small, right? I mean, as a subspace of this, I mean, this thing is a vector space over K. Right? As differential sets, it's very small. This is infinite rank, for example. And this is just, you translate this into solving a system of linear differential equations, find the fundamental system solutions, and that will be a basis over C of your jet space, of the solution set. And two is that this guy is Zariski dense in the algebraic object of which it is a subset, of which it is a delta subset, right, at A. Yeah, so this is a, maybe I should also say, this is a delta subgroup. It's defined by, it's a closed subgroup, definable subgroup of the of J, of the algebraic space here. So these are the two main properties they prove, and actually connected, the basis you find here is a basis for this over K. It's the same basis for C and K, but let me just say it this way. So that's what they get, and then from here you get, so it follows from one, or from, follows from two rather, that if you look at the delta jet spaces of X and A, where M ranges over all this, then this collection of things determines X among all delta subvarieties of the affine space we were living in, that passing through A in a family, right? Passing through A in a uniformly definable family. Which is the kind of thing we were looking for, right? Trying to imitate the analytic case. So I should even just put, since I'm working in a uniform family, I should just put, I'll just put this, but it's actually for some large enough M. You don't have to use all of them. This follows from two because, if you fix these, you fix these guys, the algebraic jet space of the Zariski closure. That, in the algebraic case, does determine the variety, so you fix the Zariski closure, and now your set is just defined by saying that the section is equal to the derivative, right? And so that means you're preserving X as well. Yeah. So this is essentially saying it's big enough to determine. The differential jet space is big enough to determine X, and this is saying it's small enough to be connected to something small, namely the constant field. So it's sort of, you have to get right, yeah. The reason I put uniformly final here is there's one thing, which is that, I want, it's given by the section, I want the section not to change. So in a uniform definable family, the section would be the restriction of some fixed section. So when you fix X bar, you fix X because you don't move S. So I want to come from uniform S's. So I want them all to be finite rank and to be uniformly a finite rank. Okay. So what we want to do, yeah, so let me finally, so the point here is that what you conclude from one is that if C is a code for X, yeah, in the sense if you're in a canonical family like we were trying to do before, if C is a code for X, then C, then the type of C over A is internal to C. Right? And so this, as before, gives the dichotomy directly in differentially closed fields. That's gone. Oh, no, yeah, right there. That just this argument. Right? So you get that codes over realizations are internal to the constants. And this comes just from one. These are finite dimensional vector spaces. They determine X, and so they are the code in some sense. constants, and they're finite dimensional of the constants, so they get internality to the constants. Okay. So what Tom and Anand and I are looking at is to try and get an understanding of types in several commuting derivations, and to look at infinite rank. Things of possibly infinite rank, and try and understand types there, in particular regular types there, by coming up with the right notion of jet space, right? And trying to use these kinds of arguments. But we haven't. We've come up with the right, we think we're pretty sure we have the right notion, I want to say what it is, but we haven't been able to follow it all the way through to get what, you know, to get what we want yet. So, so the context now. So then, so that was the Pillay-Wigner thing, and the context I'm looking at is K delta. So delta here is several commuting derivations, and this is delta closed, differentially closed field in characteristic zero. With several commuting derivations, and what we want is the first step would be just to obtain, given x, you know, let's restrict ourselves still to the affine case, take x and say a delta variety, the point a and x, and in fact here we definitely only want this for generic and can only get it for general, so sufficiently general, for example, a generic point over whatever parameters x are defined. What is the right notion of J M delta X at A? And moreover, what once you have the right notion, what does this tell us about canonical types, and then about regular types? So there's the point here is that possibly infinite dimensional. Infinite rank. Right? In the one derivation case, the infinite rank is not particularly interesting because everything is sort of a fibration by finite rank things over affine space. Right? So infinite, basically, if you know finite rank and you know affine space, you know everything in a single derivation. Of course, in several derivations, you have many interesting infinite rank delta subvarieties. You have all the differential types in between 0 and L. So when should I stop? I know I still have time, but I just want to know. Okay. So should I say what the definition is, or should I say what we want? What we expect. Let me say sort of speculatively what we expect to get once we have a notion, what we expect to get from it but haven't got from it, and then I'll go back and say what this notion is, right? So what we expect, so we do have a pretty robust notion, and then what we expect to get from delta jet spaces is the following. So if you have P regular, so what kind of, the whole thing here is to understand, to try and get some sort of dichotomy for regular types, possibly not fine, infinite rank, but regular. P regular, non-locally modular, stationary, then P is non-orthogonal to the generic type of a delta subgroup of a power of the additive group. So we have some delta subgroup, which is a power of so just affine space taken as an additive group, and we get a delta definable subgroup of this, whose generic type is non-orthogonal to P, and moreover, it's of essentially the same size, the delta type of G should be equal to the delta type of P. Where delta type here is the in the sense of the Kolchin polynomial. So the Kolchin polynomial gives you the dimensions, the algebraic dimensions of all the prolongations of a delta variety. And this is a polynomial, and the delta type is the degree of the polynomial. So roughly the same size. They're infinite rank things, but they're, you can still compare them by looking at the degree of the dimension polynomial, the Kolchin polynomial. They should be the same size. So why, this is a bit weak. I mean, but what the idea here is, what is an example of such a G? Well, first of all, we also expect to be able to get from M to 1. Right? So just an additive subgroup of this, a subgroup, a delta subgroup of the additive group. But moreover, an example of such a G would be, take the delta type of G, and then, let's say it's D, then take L minus D derivations, and look at the constant field of those L minus D derivations. And that's an example of such a G. It'll have differential type D, right? So it's one of the constant fields, and several derivations are many constant fields, one of the constant fields, namely the one of differential type D. And so what we expect to be true, but not to be able to get from jet spaces, is that P is actually non-orthogonal to such a constant field. So you take an irregular type P of differential type D, then there should be some constant field of differential type D that P is non-orthogonal to. Non-locally. Yeah, though, well, so maybe the problem is we can't get this. But once you have this, somehow it looks like it. But that becomes rather speculative. But this we really think you should be able to get from the jet spaces, but we haven't been able to hammer out the details exactly yet. So this is maybe a weaker dichotomy than one might. What I'm suggesting is this is weaker than what one might expect. But what we think the delta jet spaces gives, just more or less automatically, by the kinds of arguments going on there, but in a slightly more general setting. So what is the jet space in this case? So we can't imitate the Pillay-Ziegler definition because we don't have these sections. It's not finite rank. But if we write down some criteria for this putative object, then that will inform that's one way of getting at the right definition. So there turn out to be several various ways of trying to define it and then trying to prove that they're the same and what their properties are. But what should the criteria be? Well, we would like it to be a delta subgroup of the algebraic jet space of the Zariski closure, as it was in the single derivation case. Okay? So it would be a nice way to be able to compare it. In fact, at least, up to definable generic isomorphism. So replace X maybe by some prolongation. And then we should be able to do this. And then we would like it to be Zariski dense. Well, what we'd like it to be is we'd like to know that JM delta of X and A for M greater than 0, again, determines X from among all delta subvarieties of affine space passing through A. This is a bit stronger. In fact, what we get and what is enough is that JM delta of nabla sub r of x at nabla sub r of a for all m greater than 0 and r greater than 0 do this. So the problem is that the definitions we're coming up with are not stable under definable bijection. So nabla here is just, taking derivations up to order r of x. It's a definable bijection, right? Just a map that takes an element x to, delta 1, alpha 1, delta l, alpha l of x, where alpha 1 plus alpha l is less than or equal to r. And you order these and you get, right? That's what I'm using for nabla. So we need to look at not just X, but all of its nabla's, which are just definable isomorphic copies of X, after all. But you take all of those and then take all their jets, and then that should determine X. And that's what we do get once we have a definition. I mean, you don't have to do this in the finite rank case because the jet space of X and the jet space of nabla X are, again, isomorphic. It's stable under taking these definable bijections of X. But we don't actually seem to be able to get that here. So you have to take all of them. Okay, and then maybe some other sort of functoriality would be something you would want, and you know, it should be a nice sort of category of objects. So let me say what one definition, but this is a later one that we've only recently been able to show is the same. Namely, just do what we did in the algebraic case, but fully in the category of the differential category. So we don't have sections now, but instead of making it relative to the Zariski closure, just do it straight in the differential category. Of course, you get something too big, but for example, to take the delta, I mean, this is even a very obvious definition now that we have it, but so take delta to be the maximal, right? The delta maximal, or the maximal delta ideal of X at A, and look at it modulo some power m plus 1. I'm just imitating everything within the delta category. And then take, now this does have a delta module structure, namely differentiation by derivatives in delta. You don't need a section to get a delta module structure on the full differential local ring. You just needed it because we were, in the finite rank case, we were trying to get it at some finite stage. So this has a delta module structure. And then you could define, say, capital J, because it's not going to be the right one, of X at A to be the set of all alpha in this object. In the dual of this object, such that it commutes with delta. Alpha commutes with the delta structure. But this is somehow an infinitary object, right? Infinite dimensional vector space. I mean, this guy already is an infinite dimensional vector space over the field. It's somehow a profinite object. This is working, yeah, it's too large. It's not a definable set. Right? So that doesn't seem like it's enough, but there's natural maps. See, this is approximated by the algebraic, yeah? So there's a natural map from JM nabla. There's a natural map from, I should give this a name. So let's call this V. So there's a natural map from V, let's call it rho R, to the maximal ideal of tau R of X. So this is the R-th prolongation. So I take nabla R of X and take its Zariski closure, for example. So you take the maximal ideal of this algebraic variety. So this is now, there's no delta here, this is in the algebraic category. And you mod this out by the same thing, the power m plus 1, and you take its dual. Here is where we're using, for example, that A is sufficiently general. But this is just, right, you can approximate this by its prolongation. I mean, that's what prolongations do. They approximate the full thing. Here, yeah, this is rho R. It's a projection from the maximal ideal of the Rth prolongation of X at the point nabla Ra, modulo this guy to the power m plus 1. So the squiggly is just, you know, the usual, you just take the same thing and should mod the m plus first power. Yeah, this is it. It's tau R. Right. It's the Rth prolongation. So tau R of X is, well, let's say the Zariski closure of nabla R of X. It's an algebraic variety. It's the Rth prolongation of X in the sense of delta in the differential field. So somewhat naively, one could define delta space of X at A to be the zeroth image, this guy. Right? The zeroth ones will go to tau zero. Tau zero of X is just X bar. Right? So this, yeah. So note that this guy is inside the jet space That's a dual of this. So this is the algebraic jet space, right? The algebraic jet space, tau zero is just x bar. So it's the nth algebraic jet space of x bar at A, which is where we wanted it to live, in some sense. So you just take its truncation. I mean, we're somehow forgetting a lot of information. And this is why it's not enough and why we need to take all of these guys. Because somehow this is too much. You're just taking one piece and that breaks it up. It's not clear from this definition that it has any of the nice properties. But there's another definition, which I don't have time to talk about, and I won't, which is, in some sense, for me, the original definition, coming from what we're calling interpolating maps, which is basically, instead of defining this, we first define all of its prolongations, just in the algebraic category. So we define its prolongations, and then define this to be the set of things where nabla to the r is in that prolongation. And that has nice properties, and then when you show that these two are the same, you get nice properties. So let me end by just saying what we know about this delta jet space. Well, I'll just say it. It does determine, in that sense, it does determine X among all things passing through A. It is, in the case of a finite rank thing, it agrees with the Pillay-Ziegler definition. In the case of M equal to 1, which is a tangent space, it agrees with Kolchin's definition. So Kolchin gave a definition for the tangent. So when M is equal to 1, this is just the tangent space in the algebraic category. Here it would be the differential tangent space, which Kolchin gave a definition for by actually writing down the equations. And so in M equals 1, our definition does give us the Kolchin definition. If X happens to be an algebraic variety, and you apply this to it, then you get the usual algebraic jet space. Right? You don't want this in the case when X actually doesn't involve delta. This should just be equal to jet space, which it is. And it's functorial with respect to zero order maps. You get, so this becomes some sort of functor. And we thought from this would be enough to get what I said. And it seems like one has to do a little bit more that we haven't been able to do, namely this differential type calculation. The trouble we're having is computing the differential type of this thing. We know it's big enough because it determines, but it's a small enough part that seems, which is odd. One would have expected this to be maybe too small. But it seems to be the small enough part that, at least technically, we haven't been able to completely get our hands on. So I'll just stop there.